This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Covered in Pet Hair, a boozy show for pet lovers on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Isabel Alvarez-Arada, and today I have the pleasure of having a drink and a chat with a certified times three dog trainer who is going to tell us all about how context matters when we communicate with our dogs. Don't go anywhere. I will tell you all about her and introduce you as soon as we come back from these messages from our sponsors.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Covered in Pet Hair. I'm your host, Isabel Alvarez-Arada, and today I'm having a chat about context and communication with our dogs with Jen Friedline, who is the founder of Jen's Dogs. She is wife to Curtis. She is dog mom to three dogs. Wait for these names, guys. Shadow Von Wigglestink, Little Lily with the Spots, Sir Basil of Waggington. Those are her three dogs. She is the founder and head trainer at Jen's Dogs. She is Jennifer Friedline. Welcome. It's so good to have you on the show, Jen.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Well, she is the founder behind Jen's Dogs on social media. So if you don't follow her, give her a follow. Hello, Brooke. Hello, Joanne. Thank you for joining us on Instagram. Let's see if I see anybody on Facebook and YouTube that I recognize. Well, I always start this show with a game, and the most important game is our drinking game. So anybody at home participating in our drinking game, today's drinking game word is...
The secret word is Jen.
So if I say that, take a drink of whatever you're enjoying. It could be alcoholic beverage, a non-alcoholic beverage, a coffee, a tea, a soda, whatever you're drinking, just play along. It's fun to be engaged while we chat. And I know that you are a wine lover. Did you have a chance to pour yourself a glass of wine before we went live?
I did indeed.
Yes, she did. Good girl.
Yeah.
I love wine too. And you're in Oregon, so I'm sure you have a ton of wineries to visit.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So right in the middle of wine country. It's great.
Oh, I'm so jealous. I'm so jealous. I live in El Paso, so I have cacti. I don't have wine. I don't have a lot of produce. I mean, we can drive to it, but here locally, we don't have any wine. But I mean, I get to taste amazing tequila, so I'm not one to complain. But I today needed a little boost, so I'm having a carajillo, which for those of you who are from Spain or familiar, in Spain, when you order a carajillo, it's usually served in like a tiny espresso cup with a shot of whatever liqueur you want. Here in El Paso, every time I order one, they bring it iced. And with liquor 43. So that's how I made it today because I needed a little boost. Cheers. Thank you for being my guest. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to chat with you about something that is really important, something that I think people get wrong a lot, and it's communication with dogs, just interacting with dogs. And I don't mean like telepathic animal communication. I mean just like regular old, I want you to do this. And the dog's looking at you like, what is happening right now? So our first game today is called Dog Speak. And it's things humans do that dogs don't understand. And it's taken mostly from a University of Sydney blog post about 8 things we do that really confuse our dogs. Are you ready to play?
Yeah, ready.
All right. We leave them alone. How does that confuse our dogs?
Oh, well, they're social. They're very social creatures. And they also don't understand why we want to go. Like, they don't understand work. They don't understand, like, driving. They don't understand, like, going out to eat. I mean, they might understand that a little bit because they might go to, like, somewhere else to forage. But they don't really understand what we're doing when we leave. They don't know. We come back smelling like
they don't get it.
These miles and people and things and places.
Yes, actually, that brings me to my next one. The next one is we change our shape and smell.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so our fundamental smell can actually change not only by what we're eating, how we're feeling, but also what we're wearing and where we went.
Yes, exactly. How about we watch TV and other visual stimuli? They don't get that, according to this article.
Actually, now they do. Our TVs are so pixelated that it moves fast enough for their eyes to pick up on it, which is why you may notice an increase of dogs who are watching TV. In fact, my dog's favorite shows, well, Shadow's and Lily's favorite show is Bluey, but Basil, the baby, prefers Lord of the Rings.
You know, I've only had one pet that enjoyed the TV, and it was a cat.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they paid no attention to it, but I remember pet sitting two puggles that everything that happened on the TV, they were super aware of it. They saw a dog, they would bark. They saw, you know, a door, they'd look like, who's there? It was really fun to watch because they were in my house and I was not used to it. I also felt like I was stressing them out. Like, should I turn this off? All right, the next one is we hug.
Yeah, hugging is not necessarily something that really falls to dogs just because their bodies are structured differently. So they do understand the like pressing of bodies together. They just don't understand because we move our arms differently than they do. So some dogs will actually pick up that trait and hug back as they're trying to mimic us. But they do like to be close like that.
Yes, they like to snuggle for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, one thing that the article said that made me laugh is we don't like to be bitten.
No, we usually don't.
Dogs don't get that. Dogs are like, why not?
You know, I don't really know if I would say that dogs particularly like to be bitten either.
Well, like more, I guess it was more mouthing. Like, you know how they play fight each other and like we don't like to be slobbered on each other, but they kind of amongst each other will slobber and play bite. And honestly, I agree with the article. I don't like to be bit. When puppies are little and they have those sharp little teeth like vampires, like I don't enjoy that at all. But I always thought that dogs didn't like it either. So do dogs like to be mouthed?
I think that they like to be mouthed only in play. It's kind of like, I don't necessarily like people to like touch me or grab me or hold me all the time. But when I'm like asking for like a wrestle match or of sorts, then I do like it. So I think that dogs don't only like it in that context. That's a very like
exactly
context dependent.
Yes. Well, I think context is really important in all of this, right? Like context always matters and like our context and their context is always going to be different.
Completely. We're like practically two different worlds because we both experience it differently. So
yes. We experience this differently, which is we don't eat from the trash. They don't get it.
No, they're like, why did you throw away all of this perfectly good stuff? And that's what one of the things that really is probably most misunderstood about dogs. They share so much DNA with wolves that people naturally assume that they're all hunters and prey drive is definitely a thing for dogs, but they're scavengers. Their whole like drive is to thief and to steal and to forage and scavenge. So, you know, like if all the humans disappeared, you know, today, you would not find all of the dogs out in the woods. You'd find some of them out in the woods. You'd find all the terriers like going to get all the rodents. But, you know, for the most part, the rest of them, they would be going from dumpster to dumpster looking for food.
Yes, opportunists. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. I completely agree. Okay, so this one was interesting. We share territories and they don't get it. With other humans, with other dogs, we all like kind of encroach on each other. And in their minds, it's like, how dare you?
I don't know if I agree with that one. I think that they live in family units and they make friends, and I think that they, just like us, we like to have our separate houses, separate rooms, separate spaces. But I think that most dogs have a lot of really common areas, like dog parks, sidewalks.
They're comfortable with that idea?
Yeah, I think so. Because it's not really, they might get a little bit threatened if they feel like somebody is getting in their space. But like, if I'm sitting on the couch and you came to sit on my lap, I'd probably like have the same reaction as a dog.
Again, it's all about context. Agreed. Well, I know I'm guilty of this. We use our hands a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't, they don't have hands. Some dogs will use their paws a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Some dogs that are more pawsy, and some dogs that are more, use their nose or their snout more. But yeah, that's mostly because they just don't have hands. So they also don't really know what we're doing. And they go so far that they like, can be surprising.
My mom had a neighbor in Florida that was like so over the top. And like, we still talk to her. We still love her. Her name is Grace. And she is just like a walking, like just entertainment, like performance. And every time any dog met her, you could see them kind of like every time her hands moved, they'd be like, because they didn't know what she was doing. And she was just so enthusiastic with her hand movement. So if you are one of those people, and there are many of us out there, when you meet a new dog, maybe it's best to kind of like tone it down a little bit, only use your voice. Would you recommend that? Would you agree?
To some extent. But I really would only do that if you notice that a dog is startled by your movement. Otherwise, be natural and be you. Because if you start changing, if you're like, okay, I'm gonna like sit here with my arms down to my side and I'm gonna like hold my hands like this and I'm gonna like be up like this, the dog are gonna be like, why are you so tense? What's going on with you?
Yes.
So I say be natural unless you like notice a dog is reacting to your hand speak, and then you can say, oh, okay, I'll just like sit a little quieter.
Yeah, I like that. I've never heard it called hand speak. I do a lot of hand speaking, so I get it. All right, next one. Speaking of things that are a little over the top, yelling. Yelling in communication amongst each other.
I mean, dogs bark at each other, and I usually call that yelling.
Yeah? So you think that they get it?
I think they do, because like a lot of times if my dogs are for my dogs, you know, every time they're yelling or they're barking, it's usually because somebody's yelling outside.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, you're gonna bark, so I'm gonna bark.
Yeah. I love when people yell at their dogs for barking, and now everybody's yelling. And I always tell my husband, because my husband is, and I've said this before, and he will not be surprised if he hears this again, that he's like the worst dog trainer I've ever encountered. And like, it bleeds over to his parenting too. I'll be like, that is not, like, you're missing the point. Like, when you yell at them for yelling, like, I feel like nobody's really learning anything, right? And it happens with both our dogs. He doesn't really discipline our cat. Like, our cat has carte blanche here from all of us. But, like, yelling at the barking dog definitely doesn't make sense. And another thing he does, which is next on my list, is lecturing dogs. Like, I remember we had a dog named Radar who was like, this dog was just like the best. And he was like the boss of all the dogs. And Chris would say to him, young man. And I would look at him like, who are you talking to? So lecturing, does that make any impact on our dogs at all?
Yes, and probably not in the way that we actually think it does. So like, there's a reason why my dogs have long names so that I can call them by their long names. Lecturing, and I also, you know, sometimes those lectures, I call them, when I talk to my dogs, I call them a come to Jen talk, so that it's a, you know, we're gonna sit here, we're gonna talk about this, about, you know, why I have an issue, and it mostly is just a way for us to kind of reason it out. The dogs may or may not understand. They probably understand more words than we give them credit for, and there's no way to really truly test if they know the words or not. But they recognize intent. So if you're like talking to them and you're really earnest and you're like, okay, look, I really don't like being bit. I really don't like this. I don't like that. I don't like this. They're going to sit there and they're going to look at you and be like, and feel this, like you're serious. They're just going to be able to like kind of pick up on, you know, your intent. They have no idea what you're saying. It might sound like, you know, like the wah, 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 but they, for a minute, you know, like Basil, he you know, he's 7 months old right now. So we have these talks and then he looks all like curious and like labby and he's all like, I'm sorry. And then he's right back to Velociraptor. So, I mean, okay. It was for 2 seconds, but I don't think they like are sitting later and processing and going, they said not to do that.
Yeah, so no different than our children then. Because my kids, every time he lectures them, I'm like, they have checked out.
Yeah.
They have no idea what you're saying anymore. They're just looking at you and noticing that you're like, your cheeks are red. And like noticing that like your shirt has a stain on it. Like my kids already went into like another dimension. And I mean, I can't blame them because the lecturing doesn't work for me either. Okay, you talked about names. You know how people do that, and this was not part of the article, but this is something that I feel like I see happen a lot, is well, people will call their dogs names when they are doing something wrong. Does that confuse the dog? Because like, it would confuse me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like, that's usually why people end up seeking training, because they spend a lot of time teaching their puppy, like, this is your name, and they're all like super excited, but then the dog hits like teenage years and becomes an adolescent and is now like a teenage terror, and every time they say their dog's name, it's like, you know, mean and gruff and stern, and they aren't actually like saying what they mean. They're just calling the dog's name, and so now the dog's like, okay, if you say my name, I must be in like trouble, and they like run away.
Aww.
And then people are like, you know, oh, so they don't follow my commands, and they don't like, they don't do this stuff, and then like they come to training and they're just sitting there like saying the dog's name like rat, rat.
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
And that's why communication is so important. Like if you want them to drop something on a walk, you don't say their name, you say leave it or drop it or whatever you've cued them to do. But if you're just screaming Satchmo as you put your hands in their mouth, I don't feel like it's super effective, but I see it happen all the time. And The one that I also see happen, and this is our last one for the game, is punishment. Do dogs get confused when they get punished?
Well, yes and no. So punishment is part of learning theory, right? Punishment is to suppress behavior, to stop a behavior from happening. The tricky part is that punishment, it doesn't matter if you intended to be punishment or not. It depends on how the dog takes it. And it also depends on what they were doing immediately before or during the time that the punishment was administered. So if you're mad at your dog for getting into the trash while you were gone to the store, and then you call your dog over, and then you start, let's just, for, you know, for fun's sake, let's lecture them where we're saying their name and we're talking really sternly at them and we're intending to suppress the behavior. If the dog is really sensitive and now they feel like, well, you came home and now you're yelling at me, you know, and they start to feel that, then you didn't really punish what you intended. You punished what immediately happened, which was coming to greet you. So it's like, so punishment does work. That's part of learning theory. Like, it works for us too. If you put your hand on a hot stove, you quickly learn not to do that anymore because you got immediate punishment of putting your hand on the hot stove. You know, hopefully it's not a trip to the hospital kind of punishment, but, you know, it's still, I mean, even if it was like, you know, just still slightly warm, it's still going to startle you. So punishment, like, it works, but, you know, it's really tricky because if you're not giving punishment that the dog takes as punishment at the time that the behavior is happening or the thing is happening, then they're not going to tie this punishment you're giving to them now to the being on the floor, and they're going to be scared because they're being big and
exactly
angry.
Yeah, and it like affects our bond with them, which is something that you are really big on. And it reminds me of parenting too, when it's like I try to find the natural consequence of things like being burned, because the punishment just kind of, it either, if it's taking away screens, then now it's a punishment for me too. And if it's like, I'm not going to punish with food because I don't want them to have a bad relationship with food. So punishment gets really, really tricky with humans. So you can only imagine how tricky it is when you're dealing with another species that doesn't speak the same language or communicate in the same way. So thank you for that. That was super insightful. I loved it. And I did a lot of research, as I do in preparation for my show. And I read on your website that you got your start in dog training, in something you refer to as emotional recovery for dogs. Would you mind kind of going into what that means to you and why you were attracted to that part of dog training?
Sure. So the day that I started my dog training career was also the day that I adopted a highly reactive 6-month-old dog that had a massive amount of trauma in their for their first 6 months. Like this, yikes. this poor kid. Like, oh my gosh, she had so much. So, of course, as a first starting out, I had understood the basic, you know, task training and skills. That's what I had gone to a program through the company that I worked with. And so I was teaching, you know, basic manners classes and beginner classes, puppy classes and things like that up to the CGC. And I did some of that task training with our dog, Raisin. But I immediately started to notice that, like, she was smart as a whip. She was a working line dog. She was a duck lab, American lab on the hunting lab. And she was amazing. She was incredibly smart, great problem solver, figured out all the puzzles. But this task training was like, just like couldn't land on her. So I immediately started looking into, there's got to be something beyond just skill and task. And so I immediately started reading all the books I could about how dogs think, how dogs learn, how dogs feel. So the first one that I read, it was about a week into my career and it changed everything, was How Dogs Love Us by Gregory Burns. And he was not a dog trainer. He was, you know, not even in the pet industry. And he was just really curious about how to get his dog into MRI machine without putting the dog to sleep. And so he did that. And I was, and that particular book is great because it's not super sciencey, you know, so I wasn't really well versed in science. You know,
I read it.
No.
He does the whole, like, how long it took to train them to lay down, all that stuff, right? And what what they found in the MRIs, is that right? Am I remembering correctly? Yes. Yeah. I remember reading that book. It's fascinating.
I mean, that was life-changing for me. And that was it. And once I started, like, kind of thinking about that and going down that path and then, you know, finding other trainers who cared about the emotional experience of dogs and we're talking about going beyond the operant. We're talking about like these emotions and we started reading about, now I understand science a lot more and I can handle a sciencey read. But, you know, 7 years ago, I was like, oh, I don't know. But so I really liked how conversational it was. And that was what really helped us find relief of being able to help her regulate her emotions and resolve her emotions but so that she could be in a thinking, learning brain. And then the task and skill training was a breeze. She actually became my demo dog at my previous facility. So she went to work with me and she was reactive, but she wasn't traditionally reactive. So like she could be anywhere. She didn't care about other dogs. She didn't care about other
Got
people.
It.
You know, all of her turmoil really was just in her own head. The poor girl.
Isn't it all like, as they take that on too? All my turmoil is inside too, usually.
Yeah, so she, you know.
That is super cool that she was able to get to a point where she was comfortable in a really dynamic environment, which is like a training like center or dog training facility is really ever changing.
She really needed a job. So, of course, like once she realized that she had to learn this stuff in order to be able to do this job, I mean, she really took to it. She really loved it. And then, you know, I mean, I gave her the freedom as you would any coworker, you know, I didn't say, okay, you ready to go to work? And she'd run upstairs and dive into the bed and under the covers. And I'm like, okay, I guess you're not going to work today.
Well,
I think she'd take personal days. Yeah. So she worked really hard. And unfortunately, like she was kind of my experimental dog and she died really young. She got really sick all of a sudden. And we think that is probably due to the amount of stress that she was in. So that just kind of doubled my efforts. I had already at that point started Jen's Dogs. And so I was able, that's why, was because I needed to be able to get out of underneath somebody else's curriculum and somebody else's thumb so that I could develop my own curriculum and my own, where I could actually get to where people who needed me and be able to help them.
That's
awesome.
And
so that's what I do.
How does working with a reactive dog today impact the methods that you use?
I'm force-free and I'm positive reinforcement, but really we start with that first, a vet check. You know, we have a long conversation. We break it down. We talk about all the behavior that's happening. And then we start with a vet check. What's going on? Is this sudden? You know, do you have a clear idea of when this started? And if you don't, and it just seemed to come out of the blue, let's get a vet check, make sure there's no pain. Because I don't know about anyone else, but if I'm in pain, I don't have any spoons to be nice to anybody. So, you know, we'll get a vet check. And then we'll start with just the management. You know, a lot of times when people come to me, they've like done so much and they're doing so much, but it's not necessarily effective. So we fine tune and tweak their management so we can prevent any of the reactive behavior, dangerous behavior or fear that the dog is experiencing. And we just tweak it so that they just start to feel a little bit more comfortable. They're not triggered. We reduce their triggers so that they're not getting these stress hormones released in their brain repeatedly. And then, of course, you know, we just try to have fun, like find some things that you guys like to do together. Let's start looking at our dogs as what they are, which is a different species. And all of these things that confuse them about us, let's start helping them to have species typical outlets for their behavior. And let's make sure that the reason why they are acting out is not from unmet needs. And so we meet their needs. And then sometimes I'll do a little bit of task training just to give the guardians like a really quick, like immediate action to be able to interrupt or redirect or to give immediate relief so that they just start to feel like they have something that they can do. And then we start working on their emotional regulation piece. And that part gets pretty tricky. You know, it's therapy.
It's tricky for humans. So I can only imagine, like, I'm raising two small children and there is zero emotional regulation. And so they understand and I can reason with them, right? Like, this is, I know it's been a long day, but, you know, we need to go see your great grandmother or whatever. I can't reason with a dog like that. So it's got to be a challenge. And do you find that the pet parents, the guardians of reactive dogs that work with you, take a while to kind of understand where their dogs are based on maybe like preconceived notions of what dogs are and how they operate?
Sometimes it comes in waves. It comes in waves. So sometimes there's the initial contact and then, you know, we have this is what we do. And then like, maybe because they're just like a little bit more mindful of it. So they're like really paying attention to what's going on with their dog. And so then they like, they might have a little bit of a relief from the reactivity or the fear base or whatever. Then they're like, oh, they'll like kind of put off like starting their program or whatever. And then like the behaviors, the triggers stack up again. And then they finally, like, they're like, they take the plunge. And then they're like, okay, this all makes sense. This all makes sense. And then like something will happen that's just kind of like out in left field. They don't see the connectivity of it. And so then they're like, this is not related. And I'm like, it is. But, you
okay.
know, so it's like a constant thing, like something else. You know, for me, when I went through the process of learning and when I read the books, like about even like neurobiology and all of this other stuff and how dogs think and ethology and all of this stuff that we, all of these X stress factor in dogs was the one that I just read. It's like all these little light bulbs just this kind of go off and I'm like, oh, that makes sense now. You know, it like just kind of fills in like the different puzzle pieces. And that's kind of what I really help the guardians with, because my programs are not like I come in and just tell you what to do, right?
Got
we
it.
Talk about this is where we are and this is where we want to be. Here's some suggestions, like how can you get there? And I just help them to kind of adjust the way that they look at their dogs. And it comes in ways. Sometimes they're like, I'm ready to throw out everything I know and you just mold me from fresh clay. And sometimes they're like really, really like they've already been fired at, like, you know, through the kiln. And it's like, now we got to like find a way to like kind of chip off this part and then glue it back together.
Yeah. Well, I think that if a guardian hasn't had a reactive dog, they have no idea what a reactive dog, the impact that a reactive dog can have on the life, the harmony of the home. I had a reactive dog and it was constant stress. And I waited too long to muzzle train her. I've talked about this before. And I worked with a lot of trainers. And one of the things that we did wrong first was use aversives for her. She was 6 months old and I didn't know any better at the time. This was a very long time ago. And you know, I can look back and see all the things I did wrong and all the things I could have done better. But now if I were to encounter another reactive dog, first of all, I'd try to avoid it because it is a lot. But second, let's say I just happen to end up with a reactive dog, I would know better what to expect because I really went from like passive, assertive, fun dogs, dogs that ran the gamut, never had a reactive dog really to the point where they were not able to really comfortably be in public. And then I got Sox and it was like, whoa. And I think that happens to a lot of people with their first reactive dog. And I think it's probably hard for you to convince the people who have had 20 dogs that this is not that unusual. You just have been lucky thus far.
Yep.
And now you need a different approach.
Yeah. The big thing that I kind of point out is that the environment that people are living in now is completely different. The genetics of their dogs is slightly different. The learning of their current dog is different, you know, and the self, like the personality. So like there's a lot that goes into that. I don't usually, you know, focus too much on like, you know, everything that we've been, and there's also like new science, right? There's
right.
That's the biggest challenge is that people have had this long history of the past 50 years or so of being told this is the way a dog is. They don't have emotions. They don't have, you know, they're just subservient. You have to be, you know, all of these, you know, myths or studies that never really happened, these like ideas and then, you know, that have been debunked. You know, like dominance theory and alpha. There's just get a lot of people that when they have a reactive dog, they think they just have to be firmer and more. And like I did the same thing with Raisin. You know, when I was a baby trainer, you know, she came with a shock collar for barking, and I didn't know. You know, I didn't know. You know, I would never forget the day that we stopped using the bark collar. You know, it was one that it started with like a little vibration. And then if like within 10 seconds, there was another sound, it would go to level one. And then in 10 seconds, it would go to level two. And then in 10 seconds, if there was still barking, it would just continue to increase. And one day, like she had it on and she gave a bark and it vibrated and it surprised her. So she whined. So it did level one and then she ran away and I was calling her and she wasn't making a noise. I was calling her. So it went to level two. And then at that point it was fairly old. And so then it like the sound of the vibration of the shock set it off to a four and then she yelped. So it went to five. And then before we even within like 30 seconds, it seemed like it was already up to like the fullest. And she was like running away from me. I couldn't get to her. And it was just like, and I just like finally got her and she was just a puddle on the floor. And I was like, oh God, what
yeah
just happened? And I felt so bad. And you know, we all make mistakes. We only know what we know until we grow. And so that's what are you supposed to do? And so that's what the general idea of dogs is that you have to be bigger, meaner, stronger than them for all of this, right? Like you have to do it. And that's a hard one. That's what people feel that way, but they're doing this and they feel the way that I do. They're like, this doesn't feel right.
Yeah. And oh, so same. I was working with a dog trainer. Yeah. I was working with a dog trainer with a shock collar and like an e-fence, an electric fence. And I was training with one dog in the front and my then partner was training with the other dog in the back. And I could hear the dog in the back yelping when every time he'd cross the threshold. And I was just like, shut it down. Shut it down.
Yeah.
I don't know anything, but I know that this is not it. And so we luckily, like at some point, stopped it. But I think we had already done some damage by, you know, putting a reactive dog in a situation where she was super confused as to why she was getting shocked and bah, 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 bah. Because again, context is everything. And I couldn't explain the context to her. So, I mean, there are excellent dog trainers out there. There are lots of methods out there. I know so many, everybody who's been on my show, I would endorse as a dog trainer for anybody who was looking to work with somebody. But I obviously, a lot of pet parents, guardians don't know what to look for in a dog trainer. So I'm going to point out all of the acronyms that you have listed by your name.
Yeah.
And would you mind telling us what they are and why they're important to you?
Sure. So I'll start with why they're important to me. And the big reason why they're important to me is because the pet industry is completely unregulated. They're actually not completely. If you're doing pet food, there's a lot of regulations on that. But if you're actually working with the living, breathing animal in front of you, there's no regulation. So literally anyone can start a business. And a lot of people in the pet industry, they don't even get a register an LLC or get insurance. So the reason why my certifications are important to me is because it shows that I have taken the time to get learning and to prove that I know and get testing that I know what I'm doing so that it gives the clients some protection. It's really what all of licensing is all about, is it gives the consumer protection. So if something that I do is outside of the ethics of the organization, I can be reported and I can have my certifications taken away. Of course, I can still do business, but that's why it's important to me. So I am a CBCCKA, that's a Certified Behavior Consultant K9, Knowledge Assessed. I'm a CPDTKA, which is a Certified Professional Dog Trainer Knowledge Assessed. And both of those are through the Certification Council of Professional Dog Trainers, which is an international organization. And that is strictly a testing organization. All they do is they just test your knowledge. So you don't have to, you do agree to follow what they call LIMA, which is very least intrusive, minimally aversive. And that is what we follow through those. That vet check is first, and then management, and meeting species typical needs as positive reinforcement, and so forth. Does not endorse positive punishment. If it's like a roadmap, and before the positive punishment methods, there's a huge stop sign. So it means that we're going to start from the lowest end and we're going to work our way up. And that's as far as we're going to go. But if you are following those, then you don't ever have to go any further, really. They're not guiding principles as far as they're not going to tell you what methods to use. All they're doing is making sure that you understand learning theory, ethology, and your neurobiology of dogs and behavior of dogs, emotions of dogs, all of that stuff. So for professional dog training and for behavior consulting. The last one is I'm a certified FDM, that's Family Dog Mediator. And that's a program that is offered through Kim Brophy. It's designed by her. She's an ethologist. She does. You can also become a licensed FDM. I haven't taken that step yet, but really, that means that is a teaching course, a learning course that I took with testing throughout in order to gain that certification and pass. And the big thing about the FDM model is the legs model. So you're looking at a dog on all four legs, and that's the learning of the dog, the environment the dog lives in, the genetics of the dog, and then the self, like who is the dog outside of those things. So it's not necessarily a training certification, that one just says that I understand the ethology of your dog a little bit better. So I'm able to help you, like, why is your German Shepherd barking at everybody?
Or yes.
You know, why is your Golden Retriever always have something in its mouth? You know,
you're putting things into context for us humans. Yes, I feel like this is new to me. FDM is new to me, which is one of the reasons I wanted to ask you about that. I had not heard of that training program. I love the four legs idea. I love it sounds more holistic than just the brain, because the brain is one part. We can't control the brain. We can, however, sometimes control the environment. So there's a lot at play. And I love that there are different aspects. I want to invite you to play a second game with me, which is a perfect segue, because this is called Quip and Fetch. And while you have been trained by excellent dog trainers, and I'm sure you've mentored many yourself, there are some quips that you are using, that you have used on your social media, that called my attention. And they're cute and they're fun and they're really, I find them to be really intentional and positive. So I had to include them. And some of these are by you, and some of these are by your team. So the first one I got in this quip and fetch is from Sarah, one of your dog trainers, that says, be patient with yourself. What does that mean to you as a dog trainer?
So to be patient with yourself, you have to give yourself grace and slow yourself down. As humans, we have a tendency that as soon as we do something once, or we teach something once, or we see a dog do something once, we just assume, okay, you can do it. And then we immediately raise the criteria, and then we go, oh, wait, why? And we're confused why they don't know how to sit for 5 minutes when we just taught them how to sit for 1 second. So be patient with yourself and keep it slow so that you allow yourself the time to build good, healthy habits, but also understand that you're going to make mistakes. So when you make mistakes, like I now want my dog to sit for 5 minutes, even though I just taught him to sit for 1 second, like understand that that's a common mistake that humans make, and, you know, have that grace and patience with yourself.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, no human I know has ever been told to do something one time and got it immediately. Like, I have asked my husband to unload the dishwasher a certain way every single day of our existence, and it's still not being unloaded the way that I think is the best way to do it. And we're both of the same age, about the same education level and all that. So when he tells me also about something that I have no interest in, I'm not going to learn it immediately because I don't like football. I don't care. I don't know. I don't care. And so you can tell me once, you can tell me 10 times. If you don't put it in a context that I understand and care about, I'm not going to get it. So yes, patience all around for sure.
Probably.
All right. Shay said, end training sessions on a positive note.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Why is that important?
Because if it wasn't fun, you're not going to do it again. And if you weren't successful, you're not going to do it again. You know, like that's just really important. And that's also a good reminder to end while it's still fun and that you are still successful.
Yeah.
Training fatigue and practice fatigue is a real thing. And so if you're pushing your dog and you're not, or you're pushing yourself and you're not recognizing the signs that you're starting to get fatigued, then it's going to end and you're going to be like, well, that was awful. And then what's going to happen the next time you want to train?
You're not going to want to.
No.
It's going to be such a drag. Yeah, really, like celebrating and then calling it quits for that one time. You said in one of your quotes or quips is set one goal at a time.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You can only really do as much as, you know, the workforce and all of us entrepreneurs want to think that we're really great at multitasking. Essentially, we really only can do one thing at a time. So you might as well put your all into this one thing and then move on and break it down. You think that it's having your dog sit for 5 minutes is one goal? That's not. That's like 1,000 goals all
right,
molded into one. Your first goal should be to sit for 1 second.
Right.
And then maybe sit for 5 seconds and break it down into one goal at a time.
I love that. Yes. Rome was not built in a day, right? So neither is your dog. Your dog's training is not going to happen like this. Safety first, fun always. Tell us about that.
Oh, yes. Well, many people who, you know, what do you call them? Adrenaline junkies, and they want to go and bungee jump and free and jump off of the skydive and do all of that stuff. Yeah, I bet they're doing it with a lot of safety protocols in place, whether
that's
they
true.
Want to admit it or not. So if you're doing something that's dangerous where there's potential for harm, then it's really not going to be that fun, no matter how scared you want to be. Because if you hurt yourself, then
right.
It's really not going to be fun.
Yes.
So always, true. Always make sure that you're playing it safe, whether you are. And dogs, you know, they have emotions and they can get overwhelmed. And, you know, safety doesn't always mean like muzzle training a dog who might bite or pick up things that they're not supposed to, like eating rocks. It also could just be being safe with your connection with your dog and
yes.
ending on that positive note so that you're not getting into dangerous territory and damaging your relationship, or that you feel insecure. If your dog is like all of a sudden not listening to you, that damages your relationship.
Yeah. And I was immediately thought about like a safe environment, right? Like if they're learning something and there's just like a trash truck booming down the street, or, you know, a child crying, like like if they don't feel safe in that environment, that probably isn't the best place to train. And I feel the same way with like my kids or with myself. Like if I'm going to learn something, it's not going to be when I feel like my life is at risk, right? Like I'm not going to learn anything. I'm going to be completely shut down, survival mode, save me, please. So I think it's really important to remind people that safety is not just about how we feel safe with interacting with our dogs, but how they feel in their environment. And with us, like you said, that bond that's so important. Then you say, happy dogs, happier homes. Tell us about that philosophy. Seems simple enough.
My dogs are not happy and they're mad and they're yelling and everything. I mean, heightened emotions are contagious. You know, it goes in the same vein of like, if everybody else in the house is happy, then they're going to be content and they're not going to bother you.
It's true. Heightened emotions are contagious. I love that. That is such a good, you see, you're good at these little quips, these little reminders. I like this. Train hard, rest easy.
Oh, yeah. That one's a good one. That's all about balance, you know? You know, training hard, everybody thinks, oh, we've got to work our dogs. You know, we've got to exercise our dog. A tired dog's a good dog. That doesn't mean necessarily run them and turn them into athletes. But if you train diligently and you really are careful with your training, then your dog builds safety and security in knowing exactly what the clear path to success is. So they feel comfortable, confident, and safe to be able to take a nap and rest because they know what the rules are. So being able to, you know, be diligent about your training just allows for everyone to know where the boundaries are.
Yeah, consistency and safety kind of go hand in hand, or paw in paw, if you will. last one, eager minds, wagging tails.
Oh, yeah. Puppies especially. But dogs in general, you know, they want to learn. You know, what is it that people usually say? The dog wants to please us. They want to be successful. They know they live in a human habitat and they really are designed for 20,000 years to like be our companions. So they want to work with us. They're just waiting for you to tell them what to do. And especially now in this environment, like it becomes fewer and fewer and fewer people have working dogs or jobs for their working dogs, but we have working dogs. I have two working line dogs. I have a long coat Dalmatian and an English Lab, you know? So thankfully, like, they have figured out their jobs. Well, Basil's still the puppy, but, you know, they just are waiting to know what is our job? What are we supposed to do? Tell us what to do. And they are little sponges. So, you know, there's so much that you can teach them. And that, again, just leads to a clear path to success. And they're happy to work. That goes in with that balance, too. It's not just like, let's run as much as we can. Let's work our minds, you know?
Yes. Yes. Work has like this connotation in the human world where it's like physical labor or like intense, like, you know, data entry or whatever the work is. And for dogs, it could be something as minor as like foraging, right? For like their food, like that could be work for them. Something as simple as that or yes, like nose work outside or agility training or barn hunt or a million different things out there that most pet parents aren't even aware of. But like at something at home is just taking a walk and letting them sniff or whatever to like get their mind going. And it's interesting because I too have two working dogs and like, yeah, they don't have a job other than to wait for me for our walk every afternoon. Now, this time of year, it's in the afternoon. In the summer, it's in the morning. And like that is, they take that job so seriously and they are not pleased with the day until that work is done. It's like they punch in for the walk, they punch out and now everything's cool. But until that happens, it is definitely on the agenda and they will not forget about it. So it's interesting how you said we all have working dogs, but we're not working them. And it really is something to consider when you're adopting a pet. Are you able to give this dog the work that it's bred for, you know, millennia or however long to do?
Whatever that word was or whatever that was.
Whatever that time was.
20,000 years.
Yeah.
Take.
All right. So you have team members at Jen's Dogs. And I just said Jen. So drink up, people. if you're playing the game. So tell us, how do you choose dog trainers to join your team? Do they come with experience? Do you train them? How does that work?
So it's really, it's actually very, very difficult. It's a lot more difficult than I thought. And I'm very, very lucky to have Sarah and Shay as my junior trainers right now. And both of them I found as clients. They came to me. Well, Sarah, she actually, I've known Sarah for several years. She owns her own business. She runs a shop that specializes in enrichment toys, and she makes them and she carries them. And that's how I knew her, because she makes the best snuffle mats.
Cool. So, you got to give me her info. Give me her info before we log off.
Yeah. She's like, she'll be really mad if she gets 100 orders because she can't make them. But I'll give you her info.
Awesome.
But she has other product lines. And so that's how I knew her. And then she got a puppy and she came in and I was just watching how she worked with her puppy. And so then I was just kind of like, I don't know, I just got a gut feeling. And I was like, you ever thought about being a dog trainer? And she was like, I've always wanted to do that.
How cool.
I just brought her on and taught her, you know, they teach our basic manners line level 0 through 4. But then Shay was also a client. She had her dog, and they have a lot of dogs that were living together.
Okay.
And they were all starting to get just a little bit overwhelmed and weren't really getting along. So she was in one of my specialty services. And over that time of me being there with her and seeing how much she worked with her dog, because there were multiple family members that had multiple dogs living all together. So,
wow.
Seeing how much she worked with her dog and how much she loved it. And then she has a horse and she spent so much time in 4-H. And I just, over time, I just realized that this was something that she was maybe trying to break into. And so out of all of us, even though I have all these certifications and I've done all this reading and this research and I specialize in big emotions, as far as trainers go, Shay is actually our most qualified because she's trained rabbits and horses and dogs. So she's done multi-species. And so then she's come on and she's been fantastic because she already understood horse training. So it was really easy to kind of make those correlations for her into dog training.
Your facility does in-person dog training, and you offer group classes. If you don't follow Jen's Dogs on Instagram, go ahead and follow them. You have great pictures of the actual classes going on. Do you ever work with anybody outside of your immediate area?
Yes. So all of the group classes and our basic manners, private sessions are all held at the Jen's Dogs Training Studio here in Forest Grove. And those are all taught by Sarah and Shay. They offer all of those classes. I specialize in the big emotions, the fear, aggression, reactivity, dangerous behavior. And so for me, I work predominantly in home and I do a lot of virtual as well. So even if for people who are not in my area, or the biggest issue is dogs that won't let people come in the house, that we really have no choice but to do virtual. So I offer virtual. And then we also have our group class is now being offered as virtual as well.
Super cool. How effective is virtual training in these situations, whether it's group or individual?
It's actually just as effective as in person, you know, because we are essentially, you know, together live in these virtual situations, and I'm able to see everything, especially now. There's not usually any delay. So it's not like it used to be where you're like, okay, they did something and then I have to wait, you know, the 10-second drag to see what's happening before I give feedback. Like, it's pretty instantaneous at this point.
Yeah, technology's making it easier.
Yeah, it really has. And you know, all of the platforms now, they drown out background noise. So I don't have to worry about, you know, if my dogs are doing anything or anybody's like anything, any noises around are happening. And as long as the biggest thing is that I'm just not there to show people with their dog, but I have tons of video that I show of examples. So I already have all that like queued up and ready. So they're able to watch that. I'm able to walk them through it. We let them do the thing and then we talk about it. And then we do the thing and then we talk about it. So as long as people are able to have a setup where they can set their camera where I can see the dog and them, then we're able to do that. Sometimes I will utilize if we have like a helper, you know, if I'm not there, if they're outside my area or they don't really, it really doesn't matter if I can come in the house. They really just want to make sure like their friend or their sitter or a family member can come in the house. Then I'll like text the helper
while
I'm on the Zoom with, so I'm able to orchestrate everybody all at once. Cool. So. Yeah, so it's actually just as effective as being live.
That's perfect.
Everybody time. A lot of people really feel a lot better. Sometimes when I show up at people's houses, you can tell they've like felt really stressed and they've like, because I'm coming into their personal space. So they've like cleaned their house like immediately before me getting there. And now they're all like, oh no, she's going to see that I have dog hair on the floor. And I'm like, so do I.
We don't care. We don't care. Yeah. I remember that as a pet sitter, like the initial meet and greet was always like, you could see they were flustered trying to get everything ready. And then after the relationship was established, like I could see how they actually live. And I was like, just live, just live. The whole point is the convenience of us coming to you where you are, figuring it out where you're at. So yeah. So tell me, how can my audience learn more about you, your team, and Jen's dogs?
So as you've mentioned several times, thank you. Our Instagram is a great way to see what we're doing, what we have done, as well as any upcoming classes that we have. Our website is jensdogs.com. That's JENNSDOGS.com. That lists all of the services that we have. Pretty much everything that we do is all on our website, and our Facebook mimics our Instagram. So
perfect. All right. Well, I just want to propose a toast to you for being so awesome, for educating us on how important context is. Cheers. I also want to propose a toast to my executive producer, Mark Winter at Pet Life Radio, and to all of you for joining us today. Thank you for spending some time checking in on these amazing guests that I bring you. I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. Here's to a life covered in pet hair, because there's no better way to live. Cheers. To learn more about Covered in Pet Hair, please visit coveredinpethair.com or petliferadio.com. Thank you so much for watching, for tuning in, and I will see you next week. No, that's a lie. I will not see you next week, because next week I'm on a cruise with the Texas Pet Sitters Association. We're having the 10th annual Texas Pet Sitters Conference on a cruise. I'm emceeing, I'm presenting a few sessions, and I will be cruising to Cozumel next Thursday. So I'll see you the following week. Thank you again for watching. Thank you, Jen, so much for joining me, and I hope you guys all have a great rest of the week. Thanks again. Bye.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.